this is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, and you're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. A number of key Civil War battlefields are being threatened by new development projects, shopping centers, townhouses, business parks. And one of the latest efforts involves 17 acres of land at perhaps the most important battle of the Civil War. That would be Gettysburg. It took place 155 years ago this week. The land in question is a hospital area where members of the 2nd Vermont Brigade were taken after they successfully fought off Pickett's charge. Why is it so important to preserve these battlefields? Could these lands be put to a more productive use? These are some of the questions we have for our guest, and that is Vermont Civil War historian Howard Coffin, who has written a number of great books detailing Vermont's involvement in the Civil War, including Full Duty, The Battered Stars, Something Abides, 9 months to Gettysburg, and Guns Over the Champlain Valley. Howard, it's always great to have you back on the program.
It's a pleasure to be here, Bob.
Howard, you've been very involved over the years to preserve battlefields where Vermont troops have played an important role. You're involved in one right now at Gettysburg for a hospital site where thousands of soldiers were treated. Many died there. Before we get to the specifics of that particular effort, I want to step back for a moment and look at the big picture issue of battlefield preservation in general. So some listeners might be wondering, what's the big deal here? Why is it so important in your mind to preserve thousands of acres of battlefields?
Well, perhaps the great Pulitzer Prize-winning historian James McPherson said it best. He said that you cannot understand a Civil War battle unless you can walk the ground where it took place. And that, according to my experience, had been very true. To understand the combat, you have to see the rises and falls of the land and where the troops were sheltered from fire and where they were exposed and so forth and so forth. But at Gettysburg, in this fight to save a hospital site, there's another aspect that comes in. This is a place where 4,000 wounded, the most severely wounded after the Battle of Gettysburg, were treated. And the man in charge of their treatment was Dr. Henry Janes, who was a Waterbury man. Janes, after the war, came back to Waterbury and was a town physician, and he became increasingly anti-war. He talked a lot about how easy it is to stage parades and have military music and get everybody fired up about patriotism and war. But the average person never sees what the doctor sees. The boy laying in front of you with his eyes blown away, with his arms shot away, his whole life destroyed, even if he does live. And Janes thought that was as important an aspect. I do know that while this Civil War hospital operated after Gettysburg, guards who were stationed a half a mile away from the site could hear the screams of the wounded a half a mile away. They said it was pathetic.
So you mentioned in order to understand some of these battles of the Civil War, it's really helpful to go walk the site itself. Why do we want to remember these battles? What's the significance of us understanding what happened at these battlefields?
Because they're so incredibly important to our history. It's hard to imagine what America might have been like after Gettysburg, if Gettysburg hadn't come out the way that it came out. What if Lee had won at Gettysburg? But if you would you walk that terrain at Gettysburg, it becomes pretty quickly clear why he didn't win. As you walk Pickett's Charge, for instance, you see places where little hollows where his men got shelter. But as you approach the Union lines, they rise up out of these protected areas and are just exposed to brutal fire. And then, of course, they have to climb fences along the Emmitsburg Road and then just keep climbing into the mouth of thousands of rifle muskets and cannon. And then other parts of Gettysburg, much more complex, why were the battle lines where they were? Why did the attacks happen where they were? But it's all right there to be understood.
Let's try Damaris again. Hi, Damaris.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We sure can. It's great to have you back.
Oh, great. Okay, great, great. Thanks. I lived in Pennsylvania. I grew up in Pennsylvania. I went to Gettysburg College. I graduated from Gettysburg College. As students at the school, we spent a lot of time on the battlefield because that was the place we would go for dates and talks and walks and whatever. I also, my freshman dorm, we were overflow students, and we were in what was the hospital for the Civil War. It was a very old building with a lot of strange and, you know, high ceilings and old architecture. The idea of developing that park into townhouses and whatever is abhorrent to me. I think it's a crime.
Let me ask you a question. Before you went to Gettysburg College, did you have much interest in the Civil War?
No. No, I didn't know too much about it. I had lived in the South, unfortunately, for a few years, so I had some exposure to the conflict between North and South. But no, I didn't. I appreciated that when I was at the school.
Great. We appreciate your phone call very much. Let's talk to John, who's calling from Newport. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'd like to comment that Lee could have never won at Gettysburg. It was a total mistake for him to charge up that grade to the stone wall. And there was no way he was going to win. And that was the beginning of the end for the Confederacy. And also, I agree with your former caller, to make townhouses there is a total mistake. It would be an atrocity, actually.
Well, I would agree with your comment on Lee to the extent that using the tactics that he used at Gettysburg, the frontal assault on the third day, no, he could not have won. But had he listened to the advice of Longstreet and gone around the southern flank of the Union Army and taken a position somewhere between Gettysburg and Washington, he might have had an excellent chance at victory.
So Howard, Robert E. Lee is a brilliant general.
Absolutely.
Why does he reject the advice of General Longstreet and decide to go ahead with Pickett's charge, which is really, for folks who might not be familiar with it, is, you know, lining up thousands of soldiers who are going to go over a fence and across a field into massive gunfire?
Well, Lee had tried on the first day, he tried to break through the northern end of the Union line and failed. The second day he tried the southern end of the Union line and failed. And his reasoning was, well, if the ends, the flanks of the line are so well defended, perhaps the center is weak. That proved to be a mistake. Also, he was beginning to run low on artillery, ammunition, and if he was going to do anything in the north on this invasion, he had to do it, and he had to do it quickly. And the troops that he had with him, although they were fewer than the Union, had never let him down. And he probably had a great overconfidence in those remarkable soldiers that one more time, somehow, they would pull him through.
And let's just speculate for a moment. Let's just say he had been successful. Either Pickett's charge had been successful or he had taken the advice of his other generals and tried to hit the Union Army at a different flank. What if the South had won Gettysburg?
Yeah, he was probably going from there to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to make sure that the railroad line coming in from the west was in Confederate hands, so Grant couldn't rush in big reinforcements. We're not sure where he's going from there. Maybe Baltimore, maybe Philadelphia, maybe Washington, possibly New York City. But he would have been on the loose, and he would have been very, very dangerous. And there's an excellent chance, in my opinion, that he would have been so dangerous, and the northern people would have been so terrified that right then and there he could have brokered some kind of a peace. And always remember, the North had the tough job in the Civil War. They had to produce a complete victory to wipe out the Confederacy. All the Confederacy ever needed was a draw, just to keep alive.
You know, it's absolutely staggering and amazing to think that the history of this country could have been affected so differently by 2 or 3 days in July in 1863.
Absolutely. Well, it was.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who is calling from Chittenden. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I hope you can hear me. I'm on a car phone, so I apologize if you have difficulty hearing me. I just wanted to respond to your hypothetical question of a few minutes ago about the value of preserving these battle sites. For anybody who has been to Gettysburg and walked that battlefield, it's a remarkable and powerful and haunted place, even after all of these years. And so my short answer to your hypothetical question is yes, absolutely, it's worth preserving those places. And if anybody has not been, I would recommend that they go and walk those fields.
And John, when you walked those fields, before you walked them, did you have a sense of sort of the magic and the spiritual feeling that was going to take over, or did that kind of surprise you?
I would say I had an inkling, but I was really remarkably moved. So it was a great surprise how powerful a place that was.
For some strange reason, many of the battle sites of the Civil War are beautiful places. It seemed that the armies collided in beautiful landscapes, and saving them is far more important, it seems to me, because of that. But so much of America is beautiful and so much is being lost that we need to look beyond the battlefields to a wider effort at preservation, certainly.
And I think it would be fair to say, Howard, that you and I have both had the same experience that John had when we visited Gettysburg at different times. I don't know if it's a spiritual reaction, but there is something that I think you and I have both talked about. What is it for you?
Well, as Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain said when he spoke at the dedication of the 20th Maine Monument 20 years after the battle, he said, something abides, something remains here on the fields. Yeah, you get that feeling. I've told you, Bob, I know about the night before the 150th being on Cemetery Ridge with a crowd of Americans all looking at their cell phones and yammering, and all of a sudden, the sun went down and a golden light bathed the battlefields and everybody became quiet. Everybody became quiet. And then in the distance, this distant thunder, like the sound of artillery. And everybody sat quietly until it got dark. And the fireflies came out like ghosts in the clump of trees, which was the aiming point of Pickett's charge. America went quiet that evening. And I think they were all as touched, everybody. First-time visitors, 100th time, as I was. It was remarkable.
Howard, we got this email from Tim. My family just returned from Gettysburg 2 days ago. This was my second visit and the first for my kids. My 9-year-old, who hates walking and is not terribly interested in history, was anxious and excited to move on and find each Vermont monument at the battlefield. Seeing monuments to Vermont soldiers so far away brought them a new appreciation of the gravity of war and the contributions of each state, including their home state of Vermont. A must visit for everyone. I was just as awestruck the second time, and I still haven't explored everything the area has to offer. And he actually sent us a photograph that you're aware of, a granite block that says Vermont 61 bodies with an American flag coming off of.
Yes, that's at the National Cemetery, where each state, each northern state, has a burial plot. That, of course, is the cemetery that Lincoln dedicated with the Gettysburg Address.
And do you think Tim is right that, you know, you go the first time and you see it and you take it in and something kind of catches your eye, but maybe the second or third or fourth time back, you rediscover things for the first time?
Well, the first time I went there in 1967, I was overwhelmed by the task of understanding the terrain. And I remember just driving into Gettysburg blindly, not knowing the battle hardly at all, and seeing a sign that told me I was on Cemetery Ridge. And I said, this isn't a ridge. a Vermont ridge. It's 300 or 400 feet high, and it's steep. And this is just a kind of a little rise in the ground. But then it was, you know, I began to learn that ridges like that are better military defensive positions than some great big Vermont back pasture thing, you know. And I began to figure out the battlefield. And but it takes a long time. And, of course, I would advise anybody going there the first time to save a lot of time and increase your enjoyment to get some kind of a guide. Most of the battlefield guides at Gettysburg are pretty good.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. My guest today, Vermont Civil War historian Howard Coffin. We're talking about Vermont involvement in the Civil War, and in particular, an effort to save and preserve 17 acres of land known as Camp Letterman near Gettysburg. It was used as a hospital site. The Vermont legislature, in fact, this past winter, gave its strong support to a joint resolution. Howard, talk to us about the importance of the Vermont legislature going on record in opposition to this development. Is that helpful in your preservation efforts?
Oh, I think the role model here is, 10 years ago, a similar resolution was passed to prevent a big box Walmart store from being built on the Wilderness Battlefield. And Jim Jeffords and I had, you know, worked to save 500 acres down there where the Vermonters maybe had their finest moment in the Civil War, and all of a sudden, here comes Walmart, and it looks like it's going to destroy a lot of the battlefield. And we got a resolution through the Vermont legislature, and the preservation groups down there said that was the telling blow. So when these Gettysburg people of late made me aware of this situation where they're trying to save just 17 acres of 191 acres that this developer owns that includes the site of the Camp Letterman, the hospital where the most seriously wounded were kept, I thought maybe that something could be done and start with a resolution. And it was late in the session, Bob. And thank God, from my point of view, the session dragged on. And I went to always, as always, to Senate institutions who have been my great friends in various preservation efforts, Dick Mazza, Peg Flurry, John Rogers. And, you know, and we rushed it through, and then it got down to the last minutes, and Ginny Lyons stepped in to help Tim Ash's office, Mary Hooper in the House, and we got it through. And we sent it down to Gettysburg, and the people down there at Gettysburg, the Gettysburg Battlefield Preservation Association, which is leading the fight, they were just blown away by this legislation. And subsequently, I got an email last week telling me that the Pennsylvania House of Representatives has passed a resolution of its own, I believe, modeled on ours, asking that this land be preserved. And the vote in the Pennsylvania House was 193-0. Wow.
So tell us, where do things stand now?
Where do we think things stand now? Well, the pressure is building on the developer. The offers to him have been, we'd love to have you donate it, you know. If we have to raise money to buy it, we think we can. But he hasn't given in yet. He hasn't given in yet, so we're not sure where we do stand. My instincts tell me that it's coming, that I think we're going to win this one, but I can't prove it to you today, Bob.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Prudence in Burlington. Hi, Prudence. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much. We've been circling around this developer, calling him the developer and him. Who is the developer? And why does he own, is it 191 acres of Gettysburg land? Why isn't that part of the Gettysburg, I don't know if it's a monument, forgive me, or what, National Park or National Monument?
That's a very good question. This land in question, as you come into Gettysburg from the east along the Hanover Road, which I think is the third Gettysburg exit, you come in between the Hanover Road and the railroad track on which Lincoln rode on his way to the Gettysburg Address. And just after you exit Route 15, you begin to see big box stores and hotels on the left. And then behind them, there's come higher land, and it's up on that higher land that this hospital was located. The developer who owns 191 acres is called S&A Homes. I believe they're based in Pennsylvania, and they have housing projects apparently in many states. And so 17 acres would only be giving up a small part of their enterprise. Why hasn't this been preserved in the past? It's a good question. This Camp Letterman site was overlooked. When the national park was laid out, the emphasis was on the areas where the fighting took place, and there was very little fighting in this area, although there were troop movements across this area. So it didn't get a high priority. When I was on the National Civil War Sites Commission, and we studied all these battlefields, we took a hard look at Gettysburg, and we missed Camp Letterman. And I'm not sure how we did, because I should have caught it, being a Vermonter and a Vermonter in charge of this place. But it got missed. So now, if we do get the developer to concede it, it will be taken over by the Battlefield Preservation Organization. But they hopefully will only own it a short time until the Congress acts to change the boundary of the Gettysburg Battlefield so this area can be included and make it part of that wonderful national park.
Let's turn to Darcy, who is calling from Sharon, Massachusetts. Hi, Darcy. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm on a car phone, so I apologize.
No, we hear you just fine.
Great. I'm calling because I have a question about Confederate memorials. You know, Confederate memorials have been coming down all around the South, and I was wondering if Dr. Coffin had an opinion about, is there a difference about memorialization of Confederate soldiers on the actual battlefields versus, you know, in town squares in, you know, New Orleans or something like that?
Well, this story is only beginning about Confederate memorials. And yes, a few have come down in the South because African Americans find these monuments offensive, as well they should, I think, because the war was fought in the South to maintain slavery, which was the most horrible chapter in the history of this country. What is going to happen to Confederate monuments on the battlefield? The National Park Service policy right now seems to be to maintain the monuments that are there as they exist, as relics of the battle field, and that may do for a while, but it certainly would not surprise me within a few years to see pressure build to get rid of some of these Confederate monuments on the national battlefields. I'm going to have to think that one through. For instance, my favorite statue at Gettysburg, well, it's the Goodson-Borglum monument on Cemetery Ridge, but my second favorite is the Lee monument. It's a beautiful equestrian statue. Yet when I think that Lee was a slaveholder, that when his men came into Pennsylvania, they were capturing free blacks and sending them back into captivity. This is serious stuff and something we shouldn't be memorializing.
Today on the program, our guest is Vermont Civil War historian Howard Coffin. We're talking about an effort to preserve some land in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. It's known as Camp Letterman. It's a 17-acre site that was used as a hospital after the battle. Let's talk to Brian, who's calling from St. Johnsbury. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I would like to just say that my first trip to Gettysburg was this past April, and I experienced a spiritual experience there. It was just amazing, and I would like to speak out against any development there. I think it would ruin the experience for people, and I wish I could have brought more people with me, and I'd like to go back. That's how much I appreciated the place. I have a question about the battle for for Mr. Coffin. What's the most important battle for the Vermonters in the Civil War?
Well, I wrote a book saying that the Battle of the Wilderness was the most important moment for Vermont in the Civil War. We lost 1,000 men in one afternoon, keeping Grant's army from being cut in two on the first day of the Overland Campaign that really won the Civil War. But the more time I've spent at Gettysburg and considering what the 2nd Vermont Brigade did to defeat the most important attack of the Civil War, Pickett's Charge, these soldiers who were about to, enlistments were about to go up, they'd never been in a battle, and they perform like veteran troops and do something that nobody ever expected, I think, that they were capable of doing. I think Gettysburg and Wilderness are nose-to-nose, but there's some other great moments for Vermont. Cedar Creek, the breakthrough on April 2nd, 1865 at Antietam. It goes on. And now I'm doing some very interesting research on the role of the Vermont sharpshooters on the second day at Gettysburg, which may have been very crucial to the protection of Little Round Top preceding the 20th Maine's stand up there.
Am I right, Howard, that the 2nd Brigade was moved to the kind of the middle of the battle line and they were not anticipating necessarily Pickett's Charge and they thought maybe it was going to be kind of an easy afternoon?
The 9 months outfits generally had been a total failure in the Union Army. When the 9 month Vermonters, 2nd Vermont Brigade, got to Gettysburg, they were placed back off behind Cemetery Hill to sort of keep them out of the way. But in desperation, Winfield Scott Hancock at the end of the second day brought them up to prevent a Confederate breakthrough. And the Vermonters fought so well, he put them down on the main line, the southern end of the main line, sort of as a, not only was a tribute to them, but because he saw that they could fight. And then on that third day, I guess they proved that they could fight, doing an incredibly complex military maneuver under heavy, heavy fire, taking heavy casualties, only what you'd expect of veteran troops.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Michael. He's calling from Windsor. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob and Howard. I'd like to ask if any of the soldiers at the Battle of Gettysburg were using the Henry rifle, and if that made a significant difference in the outcome of the battle.
Henry sharpshooter rifles?
No, the Henry repeating rifle.
Oh, the Henry repeating rifle. I'm sorry, I'm not a weapons expert. As far as repeating weapons at Gettysburg go, I know about the Spencers that the Union cavalry had. Beyond that, I'm sorry, I can't tell you. But I'm not a weapons expert.
Michael, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's turn to Kathy, who's calling from Danville. Hi, Kathy. What's on your mind today?
Well, my comment is just sort of general about preservation of battlefields and related historical information. I just think it's a really important piece of history that I have found at both Gettysburg and at the site of the Battle of Little Bighorn out west to be very, as someone else has said, very spiritual experience and very moving and a great reminder of why we should avoid war as much as we can and respect the people whose lives are lost when we can't avoid it.
Hear. I had a very spiritual experience at Bighorn with my wife, Sue, several years ago. It was made spiritual by the presence of Native Americans who guided me around that battlefield and told me about what those people, her people, were really, really like.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Vermont Civil War historian Howard Coffin. As we look at Camp Letterman, this hospital site, I read that it treated both Union soldiers and Confederate soldiers. I found that to be a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, that's Dr. James from out here in Waterbury. He made sure that everyone was treated equally, and the numbers of dead at the hospital, I think it's 365 total deaths at the hospital. There were more Confederates that died in the hospital than Union soldiers. So he was extremely, extremely fair. Of course, later, after Gettysburg, he comes to Montpelier and opens a hospital up on the area of Overmont College up there, a Sloan Hospital, and he runs that for the last year of the war. So he's around here.
And Camp Letterman is kind of a departure, if I understand it correctly, in that it's a hospital that is very close to the battlefield. It's a sort of a field hospital, whereas a lot of the hospitals at that time were further away from the battlefields, closer to the cities.
Of course, by the time it opens on the 22nd of July, so the battle's been over for the better part of 3 weeks. It's immediately crowded. Gettysburg is absolutely overwhelmed. Every house, every barn is a hospital, but James begins to make order of all this. And he really gets a well-functioning hospital up and running. And one of the great things that he does is his reluctance to amputate. That was his major contribution to battlefield medicine, and he saved countless arms. This hospital, incidentally, Bob, was a general hospital. It was the first general hospital ever put under tents. It was a fully functioning hospital, quite amazing. And at one time, there was all the dead were buried right there by the cemetery. Eventually, most of the Union soldiers were moved to the National Cemetery at Gettysburg, and then the Confederates were taken to Richmond. But they're still finding bodies at the site of the hospital. Recently, they've had dogs who search for bodies out in this area, and they're giving all kinds of signals that they're detecting bodies down there, and there's going to be some excavations done. But, you know, recently at Manassas, graves of soldiers have been found on the battlefield. So this story of preservation and what's still there is always changing, always building. Another such an important reason to save this land, because the treasures are there, the bones of these men.
Let's turn to John, who's calling from Waitsfield. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, gentlemen. This is a great conversation. I'm glad to listen to it. I've been to Gettysburg with my dad. He's a Vietnam vet, and it was a rare bonding moment for us because he doesn't show a lot of emotion. It was wonderful there. I will play devil's advocate just as a thought exercise and wonder, it's very difficult to keep a battlefield site pristine. It is sprawling, and throughout America, yes, there are bodies under the earth where we build structures and homes and stores and commerce and town halls. This developer is a local Pennsylvanian, and I'm just wondering how we maintain the idea of saying that there were no permanent structures here getting torn down. And even on the Gettysburg compound, now there are paved roads for gasoline automobiles, which never existed, and there are new sewage pipes, and there are Starbucks and hotels. Just wondering if you could speak to the larger idea of how difficult it is to keep any memorial site pristine, and this guy is a developer, and it would provide jobs and homes and all that good stuff. I'm not sure I believe what I'm saying, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, you know, America has not taken that big step down the road to preservation that it must at some point if we're going to have anything left, and that would be land use planning. But we have not done that, and it certainly hasn't been done at Gettysburg. There's a lot of open country around Gettysburg, you know, thousands and thousands of it, beautiful Pennsylvania Dutch farms. The land is there. The land is there to be built on that is not battlefield. If you want to build something at Gettysburg, go to the preservation people, go to the national park, find out where there wasn't activity that had to do with the battle, and then go buy some land where there wasn't that kind of activity. No need to develop battlefield land.
John, thanks for your phone call. Howard, we got this email from Elizabeth who would like to know, what roles did Vermont women serve in the Civil War? Did any serve as nurses?
Yes, certainly several Vermont women served as nurses, quite a few, I think, but I do not as yet have those statistics. A goodly number of them served in the three Civil War hospitals that operated in Vermont at Brattleboro, Montpelier, and what's now South Burlington. And there were Vermont nurses at the front with the armies, but I don't yet know how many they were. There were. I haven't come on a lot of names, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they aren't out there. And of course, without the women, the state of Vermont basically would have collapsed during the Civil War. Somebody had to keep this state going, the factories, the farms, and, you know, who was it? It was the women. And, yes, and some of the old men and the kids, but it was the women who kept this state going, and great heroes of the Vermont Civil War effort, absolutely.
And we just got a note that the Vermont in the Civil War website says, quote, the number of female Civil War nurses will never be known with certainty, but it's estimated to be in the thousands.
Well, that surprises me, but I – well, it surprises me, but I hope it's right because the number of Vermonters, you know, wounded in the Civil War is extraordinary. It may be 15,000. All these men required care sooner or later when they got home, in addition to the hospitals that operated here. So that I hope that that's an interesting statistic, and I hope it bears up.
Let's talk to Randy, who's calling from Vergennes. Hi, Randy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for Mr. Coffin for being on the show today. I'm an assistant scoutmaster with Troop 539 in Vergennes, and back in April, we went down with troops or with scouts from Troop 525 in Moncton, and Howard actually helped prepare the boys, and he came to Moncton and gave us a talk so that the kids could be in the right frame of mind or understand what they were going to see. And then we took them down and spent 3 days walking around the battlefield in the surrounding area. And we could see every day the encroachment on the battlefield by development. And I think I just wanted to express some additional thought on, you know, how important it would be to preserve what is still preservable down there. And thank Howard for preparing us. And we had a great time, great weather and a great time for the kids.
Yeah, I took a bus tour down there right after you guys went. I think we might even have been at the same time. I had 45 Vermonters, and one of our people on the bus made a beautiful sign. Janet Burnham from Bethel made a sign, Save Camp Letterman. And we went out to the site, and we stood there, and everybody took these selfies. And a lot of them have found their way onto the Internet. I'm getting these sent from everywhere. So everybody can do your part. If you're going down to Gettysburg, make yourself a sign. Go out and find Camp Letterman. Hold it up in the air and put it on the Internet. I mean, this battle needs all the help we can get.
And Randy, you found that your Boy Scouts were intrigued by the battlefield?
Oh, very much so. I mean, just with any large group of kids, you'll have some that are really into history and then others that are, interested in other aspects. We actually walked around with a interpreter for the first day and visited all the Vermont memorials. They were really struck. The interpreter really set a place for us when we were looking at the Vermont Sharpshooter Memorial, the company Echo and Hotel, I think that was, and then the First Vermont Cavalry Memorial also. And the First Vermont Cavalry Memorial was way off to the side, sort of through some woods. And you would almost think like, well, why were these guys hanging out here? And I think they were held in reserve. And it just gave the kids an understanding of, the main pieces of the battlefield, but then a little bit of how Vermont was instrumental to that, particularly the sharpshooters.
Randy, thanks very much for your phone call. See if we can get a quick call in from Daniel in Essex Junction. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. I've been a modest supporter for a number of years of an outfit called Civil War Trust, which exists exactly to do what you're talking about, and that is buy and incorporate into the national park system or whatever Have you been in touch with them? And if not, have they been in touch with you? Are you on their radar screen even?
I was on the board of the Civil War Trust for 5 years. I still know people at the Trust. Yes, the Gettysburg people are in contact with them, and the Trust is doing what it can. It's a great organization, and I was on the first board that existed.
So, Howard, you're going to be speaking at the 155th anniversary of Gettysburg in November. What are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about some of the experiences that I have had on Civil War battlefields, some of them somewhat mystical, but to emphasize the importance of saving these places, not only as historic places, but as rather remarkable, beautiful places. Of course, I'm going to have a few things to say about the 2nd Vermont Brigade and the Vermont sharpshooters. And I think I might have a few things to say about the greatest words ever spoken by an American, because that'll be the 155th anniversary 47 years ago.
And that's why this ceremony is taking place in November and not in July.
That's right. This is called Remembrance Day at Gettysburg.
Well, it's been another wonderful hour with Vermont Civil War historian Howard Coffin. Howard, many thanks for being on the program today.
Bob, it's always a joy.